thank you for coming aboard another episode of the Full Sail Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Brandon Tomioi, and I am joined once again by David Deep. It has been an overwhelming few months. Just a roller coaster.
Yes.
Or to keep with the Full Sail theme, I would say that we've seen an ebb and flow of the offseason, even going into the postseason a bit. And it's just been high tide, low tide, back and forth. And I feel like we're slowly reaching the perfect storm. I don't know how long I could stretch this pun out, but
you're doing a pretty good job, man.
All right, but let's just start. And I mean, we haven't had an episode in quite a while. So last time we were talking, it was about the Clippers and Spurs. That series hadn't even concluded yet. And that, even going back, that entire postseason, I would say that was the best series of the postseason.
I would definitely agree. It was, to say the least, the best series from this postseason, and actually probably the best first round series I've ever seen. It was epic.
Yeah, especially the way it ended with the last second shot and how furious of a comeback that was for a game that was so close for most of the game. And I've actually got a story about that too, because I did not watch Game 7, and
wow.
I couldn't bear it, because if you remember at the time, I was actually on vacation, and I had planned this
way before
I had known the playoff schedule, anything like that, and I was going to be in Florida for Disney World, and the reason was for this event called Expedition Everest, which it's a 5K that Walt Disney World runs, or at least it used to run, because that was the last one, where it's a combination run as well as an obstacle course and kind of a clue mystery scavenger hunt throughout the park, or at least the Animal Kingdom park, which to me is the favorite park. But moving on beyond that, so I had no idea that Game 7 was going to be that night. There was no way for me to predict that 2 months out when I had got the tickets. It's finally happening. I know Game 7 is there. I can't watch it, because with the time zone difference, my scheduled run was going to happen the exact same time as the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I couldn't watch it at all. And I knew I had my phone. I didn't want to just check my phone, because I knew it would just distract me from the run. And it wasn't even a matter of just making sure my time was fine or anything like that. I just knew that I would be so distracted that I couldn't even do it. That I would have just been stuck to my phone, like, holy crap, I need to see what's going on with this game.
Yeah.
I would have been a wreck. And even trying to avoid it, I was a mess. An absolute mess, because it was on the back of my mind. I turned my phone on airplane mode. I wanted just complete radio silence, shut out. But of course, with technology and all of that these days, it's just impossible. I mean, I've got friends with me, I've got my wife with me, and whenever they're checking their phones, it's maybe like an NBA game time update or something comes in where something will happen and someone will read it and be like, oh man, and I'm like, oh man, what? Oh man, what? What happened? What just happened?
So wait, are you in the middle of running while the game is going on?
Yes, okay. And the game is going on, and the game starts before I start running, but I know, I know the game's going on, and it's in the back of my mind, and I can't think about it, or I'm trying not to think about the game at all, and I'm nervous, because I knew it was going to go seven games, or at least I had a feeling that it was going to go seven games, and I'm in the thick of it. I can't watch it. It is already been such a crazy series, especially considering the letdowns of Game 2 and Game 5. That I wasn't watching the rest of the series at all. It was paining me. I don't want to say paining me physically, but it was, because here's the thing, right? In my genius foresight, I'm already touring the parks before the run, and they're having this event called the I think it's like the Flower and Garden Festival over at Epcot, and they have all these little food carts and little food stands and stalls all around the different parts of Epcot. And you know me, I love to eat. So I'm like touring, and I'm trying like every single snack and food I can get my hands on. So I'm full. I'm like full on the day. And then I'm trying to run, and then I'm nervous, right? So you know what nervous means? Indigestion. So I'm getting like knots in my stomach, and it's just like it's like I've got a boulder that's just like weighing my stomach down as I'm running, and I'm thinking about the game, and I'm still trying to complete it, and I'm just like, how am I doing? How am I even running right now? And I'm trying to get through, and it's in the back of my mind, and I'm just, and I would have moments where I'm just trying to sprint out or just tire myself out so I don't even have the energy to think about anything else, just so my body is feeling numb, because I can't think about the game right now. And finally, like, we complete the run. We still have to go on and do the scavenger hunt and all the other stuff, but we at least complete the first part. We're just the run.
Yeah.
And actually, let me step back, because I will say the environment for it, it was more infuriating to have to think about the game, because if you've never done a run before, there's something about runs. I don't know why it is. This has just been like every single event. They love having music to pump people up before they even start the run. But it's not the people that pick the music. It's not like you picking the music. It's these other people picking the music that feel like they need to pick up, that their entire playlist has to be these songs that are supposed to pump you up. And so, but think of it like, but their idea of songs that pump you up are like, Who Let the Dogs Out? And so imagine listening to songs like that in succession on this playlist while it's in the back of your mind, knowing you have to run with this knot in your stomach, and it's going on the whole time, and you're just like, please let this be over soon.
Oh my God.
Please let this be over. So finally, I finished the run. I reached this point where I've pretty much tired myself out, but that indigestion, you know what happens after indigestion, right?
Something not very good.
Yeah, so like I needed to hit a bathroom fast, and so now I'm making the sprint, and finally, like, it's just everything hits my body like all at once. It's just totally like just it is literally passed through, like the day has passed through my system.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm done. I'm out of energy from the run. I have expended all the nervous energy from wondering what the game is. So I'm finally at a place where I'm content just because I don't have the energy anymore to focus on anything else.
Right.
I finally leave the bathroom. First thing, my wife turns to me and she's like, we won. We did it. We won. I finally turn my phone back on. I've like all these text messages and like game notifications, all these things coming in. Just, you know, like, oh, you guys did it. Congrats. You know, like the Clippers are advancing. This was an amazing game. It was epic. And so I'm just all of a sudden, like the adrenaline just flows right back into me. And I'm going in and I'm like, I'm ready. Let's run again. Let's do another 5K.
Let's do a half marathon.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, maybe not that far. But it was a crazy, crazy sequence of events. And finally, we finished it, and when we did get back to the hotel, because they did have TNT, we watched the replay of the game right at that spot. And we watched, awesome. We watched and saw the whole game, saw the last shot. I mean, it was amazing. It was an experience. It wasn't how I would have drawn it up or written out the day to turn out, but I've got to say it was quite surreal, and it was definitely an experience that I'll remember for a while.
Most definitely. Yeah, just watching it live was something else, because the way it transpired, like after Chris Paul pulled his hammy, I mean, there was a collective gasp, and people were concerned, especially when he ran into the locker room. So like the whole time I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. We're not going to go anywhere without CP. Comes back out. Dude is playing on one leg. Literally one leg, he's hobbling all over the floor. Like, there's no way he should be effective at all, right? But the whole time he's playing, he's pulling an Isaiah Thomas in the NBA Finals against the Lakers. It was that type of performance. And when he hit that buzzer beater in the third, that was unreal. Like, at that point, I was like, man, I don't even know what the fourth quarter is going to be like, but it's going to be awesome. In the fourth quarter, you know, it was back and forth the whole time. Clutch shot after clutch shot, missed rebounds after missed rebound, questionable calls, the scorekeeper, you know, messing with the horn. It was all types of crap that happened. And then you know, there's that ending, and it was just like, it was hard to describe. It was so hard to describe. Like, when that game finished, I didn't even care about the Pacquiao fight. I was like, who cares? This is the main event. This is the main event. The Pacquiao Mayweather fight is the undercard.
You know, I totally forgot that the Pac Mayweather was even on the same night.
Right.
Not, yeah. And I'm only remembering now because you mentioned it, and that's, I guess that stands to say.
Yeah, I mean,
how big that game was, that you shut out everything else that happened that night because that's all you remember.
Right. Yeah. Because we, you know, I ended up going to a friend's house and we ended up throwing in $20 each for the fight. And I was like, what the fuck, you know? But in the end, $20 definitely worth the Clipper Spurs game, without a doubt.
Oh yeah, no, that was prime time, and wow, I mean that was definitely the high point of the postseason. We know how the postseason ended as well, and wasn't as high. Let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about that. And it's not that we're trying to avoid the obvious, that you know, of what happened, but that it's been covered so much and it's already lingering on the minds of so many that, yes. And we've got so much to cover in one episode because it's been months since our last episode. So let's fast forward quite a few weeks. And I've got to say, last week and the opening of free agency and emojis.
Yes.
I mean,
Emoji Wars.
That was the craziest day on Twitter. And there has been definitely lots of discussion about that since, just about what an amazing day for Twitter and the internet it was, how it was unfolding. I mean, I was glued to Twitter that entire day, and I just couldn't turn away, whether it was people just, you know, following the emojis or just new news. Like, if Watch said something, I was glued. Like, Ramona Shelburne, I was glued. Mark Stein. Like, any time there was some news that was coming out about the day, that was what was happening at DeAndre's house, I had to know. I was salivating. It just couldn't get enough information that day. And I mean, beyond the it's hard to say in terms of, if you talk about like ethics and unspoken agreements about what DeAndre did, because it's not like he's the only person that has backed out from an agreement. No. He's the first one that has really done it under the microscope of Twitter, which is correct. What makes it so interesting, yes. Because we've never had a chance to follow it in this way.
Yeah, not at all. And I think people were taking, I don't think everybody took that into account, because in this day and age, it's going to be magnified times 100. Whereas in the past, you know, I mean, you had the Carlos Boozer incident, you had Elton Brand, you even had Kobe. And the thing is, with those things, they were so long ago, without social media, that it was swept under the rug. Particularly the Kobe incident, because at the time, the Clippers were just irrelevant. No one cared about them. And the fact that Kobe verbally agreed to come over, and, you know, the next day he switched back. He's like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to stay with the Lakers. And you didn't hear too much news about it because no one cared about the Clippers. But now it's like so much bigger, you know, every step is followed, and just this whole soap opera is being played out on a public forum. And, you know, it was so fascinating. And it's just not the team itself, but you got the bloggers, you have the celebrities tweeting emojis, and all this stuff was just, it just creates this huge, huge event. It was basically like a huge event all in one day.
That was a day of Twitter meant to be an event day. And you got to think, the NBA, as much as it is not a great look for them, considering that they had verbal agreements in place and that they were broken and all of that, that it doesn't make the business side of it look as fantastic. It doesn't make the business side of it look as scrupulous. But with so much attention diverted to the NBA that day, I mean, and this is the summer, this is usually the NFL's time to shine, that the NBA can readily just hijack that from the NFL.
Right.
I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul, he like blew off his appendage on his hand that day, and people didn't even want to talk about it because they were so curious about what was going on in the NBA. And it's not over an injury that could void an entire guy's contract. It's just about where a guy's going to play for the next 4 years and how that entire situation is shaking down.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you think about like the NFL, the monster of pro sports in America, and you know Pierre Paul blows off his finger, and yet it's not even close to what DeAndre was getting on in terms of attention. You know, that just speaks volumes to how the NBA has become like a basically an 11-month event every year.
Yeah, and it's nuts. And even talking about it, because we've seen now the aftermath of it, and we know that there aren't going to be any changes to the moratorium period or anything like that immediately. But there's definitely some fallout, at least in terms of DJ, where it was for many people. They saw him as the carefree guy on the Clippers. He was the fun-loving guy. And now he's got kind of that – he's got some of that heel status that has evaded him for much of his career that CP3 and Blake get in spades.
Yeah, it's definitely coming. Especially when he visits Dallas, which will probably be opening night. That will be a spectacle. I'm betting he gets booed as loud or louder than LeBron did when he went back to Cleveland the first time.
Which is crazy if you think about it.
It's insane,
because
right?
He's never played for the Mavericks. He had a non-binding agreement for 5 days to be on a team that he's never played for, and he'll probably get booed more than LeBron leaving Cleveland, where he played 7 years.
Yes. Which is just crazy. Just insane.
And the craziest part to me is how it's rationalized in terms of him holding teams hostage and this idea that this player has so much control over the franchise that he somehow single-handedly put the stake in the heart of the Mavericks franchise and is sending him off into like oblivion, that the Mavs are done, like that it's somehow entirely DJ's fault, when you look at the other side and you've got a player in his 20s, he's 26 right now, and he's got to make a decision on the next 4 years of his entire life, and someone's asking him to make that decision overnight.
Right.
I mean, you put you or me in that situation when we're 26, and someone's like, you've got a big decision to make for the next 4 years of your life, for your career, for how that goes, and just you got a night to think about it. I couldn't do that.
No, I mean even now, like even people in their 30s and 40s, it's a life decision that can affect you and your family for the next 4 years or even longer. So you have to take those things into account. It's not something that you can just easily mull over. And it felt like there was pressure from his agent and Cuban, maybe, that he had to make a decision right away, and that might have hurt it. That might have hurt him, because I think he wanted to take a longer time.
And he should absolutely have the right to take a longer time. There have been talks about how to fix the moratorium and what can be done. It would be great if players had some sort of downtime where they were shut out and they were given a reasonable amount of time to make their decision, where they couldn't get continually harassed by teams. Because if you read about what happened with DJ, that you'll see that even after the meeting with the Clippers, I mean, Parsons and Cuban were just right back out in his face, like, hey, how about us? How about us? How about us?
Right.
And then if you get so enamored by that and you get built up, in those moments, you're not going to be the most clear-minded. And that's not a DJ thing. That's an anyone thing. Because people are basically throwing lights in your face and they're just talking you up and making you believe anything. And you get caught up in the moment. I mean, it's not like he's the only person on earth to ever have been caught up in a moment before.
Right. And especially since I don't think he was very, he wasn't, there was no definitive decision. Like he wasn't really sure if he wanted to stay in LA or go to Dallas. So he was really on the fence about it. And if he felt like hey, I'm 55% with Dallas, 45% with LA, that's not a big enough swing to just say, like, you know what, I'm going to Dallas for sure. You know, that could easily change the next day, or it swings back the other way. So, like, it just made it even tougher for him, because it wasn't like LaMarcus. LaMarcus knew he wanted to go to San Antonio. He's ready. He bought out a full-page ad. He tweeted right away, hey, you know, thank the fans or whatever. DJ didn't do any of that. And I think when there was nothing on social media from him, to me, that was a sign. I was like, you know what? I don't know if DJ's really sure if he wants to do this, because there's nothing. Why would he not say a single thing about, you know, the fans in LA or the fans in Dallas or whatever? And, you know, it turned out to be true.
Because he was caught up in it, and that this decision was, it unfolded the way it did. I mean, we are so focused on what it is right now and what it means to him and how he affected the situation. I also think about what had happened if he said, okay, I've made this decision, I can't back out from it, and then he goes on to Dallas and he's unhappy in Dallas, and maybe he isn't the man. Maybe he has good numbers, but they're a terrible team, and he doesn't live up to the idea that Cuban was spewing about him being a 2020 player, which hasn't happened since, I don't know, Wilt Chamberlain, which is completely realistic. And so what happens then if it's a bust, and then he's unhappy there, and he's got one foot out the door, or maybe he only ever had one foot in, that he wasn't fully committed? Right. If you look at how that went with Rondo, yeah, that didn't go well.
No.
If you look at what happened with Lamar Odom and the Mavericks, yeah, that definitely didn't go well. And in those cases, both of those players were in situations where the contracts were closer to the end. Imagine this at the beginning of DJ's contract, if he was an unhappy camper in Dallas, and how disastrous that could have been for him, for the Mavs. I mean, you talk about the Mavs now and how that period that it took for DeAndre to change his mind might have handicapped them in terms of going after other free agents or making other decisions. What about if they absolutely locked into a decision that clearly did not work for them? Because that has bigger repercussions in my mind.
Yeah. I think that was definitely something that was valid, because he wasn't fully sold, you know, by the whole situation. So, you know, I guess the whole thing might have been a positive or a silver lining for Dallas, because it possibly saved them from having what you would call an albatross contract, because we see that all the time. And, you know, now they can actually move on, and they'll have more cap space next year. So in the end, it might have been the right thing for Dallas. I mean, I get that the fans, the Mavs fans are angry and upset. You know, and they should be, because it happened to the Clippers too with Elton Brand. All the Clipper fans were hating on him. People were calling him a traitor, blah, blah, blah. I get it. Emotions run high. You're going to be mad, and you should be. But, you know, once this all dies down, I think the Mavs fans may see this as something that might have been in their best interests in the long run.
They're not going to see it now. And for me, the thing about it too is just kind of like a final point from me is I find it a bit comical that we look at it in the situation of, oh, poor Dallas, poor Parsons, poor Mark Cuban. Like Mark Cuban is this victim when it's, you know, he's a billionaire. And you're looking at – and it becomes this whole thing. And this gets into a larger discussion that we won't cover here, because this starts talking about you know, player value and salary cap and contracts and all of that. But for a guy that's getting paid, what, it's going to be 4 years, 80-plus million, and for him to make a decision where it's going to consume the next 4 years of his life, like we've been talking about, that the next 4 years of his life is tied up in this decision, and then to look at the billionaire that's willing to write him that check, that say, like, oh, yeah, he's the victim, because he's the one that's going to be profiting off the player. I mean, that's comical to me. And it's a continual theme. Somehow, so many fans tend to side with ownership and think, oh, players aren't worth this or players shouldn't do that. When really, whatever the players do, the billionaires are still making money. The Mavs, they'll get over it because it's not like one player is going to cripple their franchise forever.
Especially if they end up signing a big fish next summer, then all is forgotten. You know, I mean, DJ definitely would have helped them transition into the next phase after Dirk is gone. You know, but as a number one option, you know, I didn't see it. I still won't see it. But yeah, I mean, as far as Cuban, he would do the exact same thing if he was in if that was him, and if he was in Ballmer's situation, he would do the exact same thing. You know, there's no way he wouldn't. So it's not like, hey, you know, you got to feel bad for Cuban, blah blah blah, because he would do the exact same thing if it were the other way around.
You know what? That's just kind of the business of it. We don't know the complete inner workings because, you know, we're kind of sitting on the sides. We don't have that in-depth detail and insight. But I'm confident enough in saying that there are probably enough shady or underhanded or less than desirable to hear about things that happen when it comes to the business of sports that for us might be appalling but are probably just an everyday fact of life for most people that work in.
Yeah, a lot of things that we don't know about. And also, a lot of owners, they do things to the players all the time. They break promises, they break agreements and contracts. You know, it's a common occurrence.
Yeah. But moving back to DJ, I mean, he was definitely the player the Clippers needed to keep in terms of staying a contender. They accomplished that. But beyond that, the acquisitions that they've made since and just throughout the offseason so far, it's been pretty outstanding. We are reaching a point where last season's bench that we groaned about so much is going to be a thing of the past. And while we haven't seen any of the players that they've acquired, you know, hit the floor yet and play with this Clippers team, you got to say, at least in terms of name value, it's quite intriguing and you could even say exciting. So, I mean, just starting off the top of the list, they traded Spencer Hawes and Matt Barnes to get Lance Stephenson. Followed that up with Paul Pierce. Then they added Wes Johnson, Cole Aldrich, and the big recent signing, Josh Smith. So all in all, the amount of talent, the depth, it looks much, much stronger than it was last season.
Yeah, I would agree. I think just last season, everybody was talking about how the bench was weak, was non-existent. You had Jamal and a bunch of guys. Hawes struggled. Big Baby, you know, had his spurts here and there. Ito was, you know, he could hit a three, but wasn't doing much else. And just to see what they have now, yes, there are flaws. Yes, there could be problems. But these are what you would call, quote unquote, high risk, high reward players, or a couple of them are. But that's the chance that I think you have to take as a team, especially a team like the Clippers, who didn't have much to work with financially. And so they had to be creative. They had to convince some guys to take less to go here. In the end, they made it work. I mean, they're not even done yet, but they've already bolstered the bench. Defensively, I think that's where they have improved a lot. Because in order to make it to the next step, I think they had to improve the defense. And to get Lance, Smith, and Aldrich, I think those are the three guys that are on improvement defensively at their respective positions that they didn't have last year. That really helped. Wes Johnson, you know, he minimum guy. Don't know what to expect from him, but he can shoot the three. He's a long, lanky guy, play some defense. And Pierce, of course, Pierce is definitely one of the best clutch players in the league. He proved last year that even at 37, he could still play. He only played 25 minutes a game, but he, you know, was huge for Washington. He was definitely a key in their postseason run. So getting him was definitely an upgrade. And then bringing Austin Rivers back, he got a lot of flack in the regular season, but he had maybe three or four games in the playoffs where he basically was the reason why they won the game. I mean, there's those two games, and I think two games versus Houston, one game versus San Antonio. So that's at least three games where he was a big reason why they won the game. So I think they're primed and ready to make a deeper run now. Well, even though the other teams have improved too, but they had to do these things. They had to be creative, and address some spots here and there to make sure that they're better equipped for next season. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of it.
Yeah, I think there are some questions about the team and at least the makeup of it and how they're going to play the players. But in terms of just getting the players themselves, I've got to say that it's a complete 180 from a lot of the Doc the GM criticism and snark that was thrown upon the team last year for things that clearly didn't work and how he was putting band-aids over moves that didn't work, like having to trade. I mean, from having to trade Jared Dudley and then ending up with a player in Spencer Hawes that didn't work out, and then moving in the direction of having Jordan Farmar completely bust for the team, and then having to buy him out and then trade Reggie Bullock, which is one of their few young assets, to even get Austin Rivers, who was a player that really didn't have a lot of value
No, not
on
at all.
in the NBA. I mean, people were questioning should he be in the NBA or not. That was the level that he was at. To really come from all of that to all the names that joined the team this season, I mean, well done. And we can deal with the questions later because there will be questions. And I know for me that I'm still trying to picture in my mind how how it looks with Lance, Jamal and Austin Rivers in the backcourt together, because those three players themselves, they tend to work well when the ball is in their hands, and they're not really known for their off-ball ability. In fact, you could say that for Lance, who had one of his worst seasons last year in Charlotte, one of the reasons was that with the lack of spacing and with the lack of the ball in his hands, because the ball was with Kemba Walker so much of the time, that he just never worked out. And so if the ball is in Jamal's hands, then maybe that happens again. But will it be in Jamal's hands? But if it's in Lance's hands, then what happens with Jamal? And then where does Austin play until? So there are a lot of questions in terms of how it works. And a lot of the speculation and rumor mill has really been asking if Jamal ends up getting moved to facilitate Austin and Lance and making it work with the rest of the team. I don't know. I don't. And even Jamal, who has never been one to shy away from questions on Twitter, he's definitely very interactive with his followers. When he was asked about whether or not he would be on the team next season, he didn't even have a very certain answer to give. So you were mentioning this earlier on Twitter that you liked, and this is getting into fantasy land when we're talking about what potential gets that we would like to see. You were talking about the possibility of getting an off-ball player that would fit in, could space the floor, shoot threes. Specifically, you had mentioned Randy Foy, and a trade with Randy Foy and Jamal Franklin would actually work out straight up for Jamal. Not saying that that happens or that's even been discussed. So if you hear us talking about it now, that's us speculating. That's not anything official or even rumored or discussed. There are no sources in this. This is just us playing around, all right? Okay. And I really like Foy, but I mean, I think it follows the idea that getting a good off-ball spot-up shooter in that spot, especially one that can maybe be a 3-and-D guy, which Foy might not be, but let's just continue with that line of discussion, that would help immensely in terms of rounding out that bench.
I think so. I think Right. Right now, Jamal is the only trade chip left for the team. Jamal and CJ Wilcox. And to round out the team, you definitely, I think maybe a 3-and-D guy or a catch and shoot guard would probably be the best option. And I was just bringing up, like, I just thought, like, hey, what about Randy Foy? His contract is close enough. You just add in another minimum contract. You know, he's a guy that a career 38% 3-point shooter, catch and shoot, can play both guard positions. Not a high usage player. And so I think he would be, you know, an ideal pickup. So it's somewhere along that line, you know, if they can get a guy like that or like a 3-D guy, that I think that would really help with the ball movement, help spread the floor out. Because, yeah, there are questions about the other guys. I mean, Smith is not a great 3-point shooter. Lance shot like 17% last year. You know, and it's just career-wise, he hasn't been that good. Austin hasn't been good either. So they still do need a shooter. I was thinking, like, hey, you know, what else is out there? And that was just one of the ideas I had.
One of the things that's really interesting to me in terms of looking at the bench and looking at how it's comprised is a lot of players that are now on the team can play multiple positions. They're not specifically a shooting guard or specifically a power forward or small forward. You have a lot of versatility in the roster now, and it kind of follows this positionless basketball idea that I know Doc has mentioned in the past and was really championed by the Warriors, literally championed by the Warriors last season, especially with how they played their bench, because they had so many guys you could just completely switch and change. You see a lot more of that now with the way the Clippers bench is, which defensively and in terms of getting into passing lanes and in transition, I feel is fantastic. And when it comes to transition, looking at guys like Lance and Wes Johnson and Josh Smith, that all seems to work really well. I feel like there's definitely something that you can build upon there. I would like to see more spacing, and I feel that can happen with some combo lineups between the starters and the bench roster as well, especially if we look at some small ball lineups too, where Pierce is playing the four. And I'm actually really excited about that because Pierce has been so good at the four and been such a zone buster and a mismatch at the four the past two seasons when he's been played that way.
Right.
So when I look at a small ball four lineup, I think you can have Lance, a shooter, and then Austin, Pierce, maybe even Blake. I can see that. Aldridge can fit in. So, I mean, you look at that those sorts of lineups. If you look at those sorts of lineups and how much switching can go on, I mean, you can see the blueprint there. And having a blueprint there, even though the season hasn't started yet, so who knows what could happen, it feels so much more tangible than whatever the bench was last year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I'm very curious to see the different types of lineups that they trot out there, because I think you can also, you could probably go, you know, Josh at the five, Pierce at the four, or Blake at five, Josh at the four, with Lance at the three. You know, it's a lot of options. It's a lot of options. So I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of combos actually work with the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited, and it also makes me wonder too, because again, we're talking about Pierce, and him as a small ball four is really exciting, but it's definitely not something we're going to see if Blake and DJ are on the floor together, because, you know, Blake and DJ are not playing the three. One of them is not playing the three.
Right. No.
So what happens then in the case with Wes Johnson? Do you think Wes Johnson is a player that maybe can be considered to play with the starters or even get starter minutes as they try to conserve Pierce more? And in that kind of case, do you think Wes should maybe even start?
Personally, I don't think he should. I don't think he's a starter quality player. You know, I'm perfectly fine with Pierce at the start of three. You can eventually you know, as the game goes on, you can have Pierce transition to the four, but you start him off at the three, and I think a lineup with Blake, Pierce, DJ, JJ, and CP, that is a squad that can really spread the floor because you've got three excellent three-point shooters. You got Blake, you can take it out to mid-range and has some three-point capability, and you got Jordan in the middle. And then Wes, you know, you can throw him in there for a few minutes. So I don't think he will start. I think Pierce will start, but I think Pierce will end up playing some four also as the game goes on with the second unit at times. And you're going to have Lance at the three also at times. So, you know, those are just some of the options that I think might happen.
The thing that concerns me about picking one or the other is while I am a huge fan of what Pierce is able to do in terms of being clutch and what he's provided for so many teams in the postseason, well, I guess not so many, provided for three teams in the postseason, hopefully four now, is just it feels like as great as all of that is, that some of it's nullified that by the fact that in his age, he doesn't have the tools to be a great defender anymore. And if you have him out in the starting lineup with Blake, who is not a great defender in his own right, that's not going to lead to any improvement on the defensive end. When you replace Pierce with Wes Johnson, you don't really get that much of an improvement either in my mind, because while he has the build and while he has the length,
right,
he still makes a lot of mistakes defensively, yeah, which have been displayed for everyone to see the past couple seasons on the Lakers.
Right.
And it's a matter of just knowing where to be on the floor, and I don't think he's grasped that yet. So one or the other, it's not going to really help the team out defensively, or at least it's not going to be a huge improvement one way or the other. And it might be a case where the team looks and says, this is a case where we actually kind of miss Barnes. Because if you look, especially in matchups with OKC, mm-hmm, who's going to guard Durant? If you say Lance, I mean, sure, but what are you giving up on? You know, it's tricky. So, yeah. So which how does that all play out?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. The good thing is that Pierce will not play that many minutes. You know, I see him playing under 30 minutes a game, about probably in the high 20s. So that will give the other guys a chance to come in and actually play some defense. I do think the team needs another wing defender, another 3-and-D guy. If they can get somebody like a Darrell Wright, which I don't know why no one's looked at him yet. But, you know, somebody like that, a 3-and-D guy, I don't know who else is out there, but I think that would increase their chances of being able to guard the Durants of the world. Because you're right, Pierce is not that guy anymore. What he does is great, and what he gives you offensively is very valuable. And I think the Clippers might have to go with offense over defense in the starting unit for the first quarter, you know, the first and third quarters, and then trot in their defensive lineups in the second and fourth to kind of, you know, balance it out and see if they can create a combo that's effective on both ends. Because because you're going to need guys that can play perimeter defense.
There's also the possibility that they might move Josh Smith up and have him guard the three position.
Right.
I don't know.
You
feel like
Josh Smith playing the three on offense. He can guard threes, I think, but you don't want him playing the three on offense. I think you'd rather have him play the four.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a thing too that we haven't even covered is Josh Smith and his shot selection and his ability to make shots, which I feel is gonna hit a lot of scrutiny at some point in the season, and is going to be it's going to be a point of contention for a lot of people, because it's so easy to focus on what he is in terms of a shooter and how he's not a good three-point shooter, how he has a very limited range the further he gets away from the basket. But then you look at the other things that he does in terms of being a defender, in terms of going through passing lanes, in terms of being a really great passer at his position, which I feel does not get stressed enough.
Yeah, he is definitely a great passer, a ball handler, facilitator, defender. He's got a lot of positives. I think the Rockets did a really good job of highlighting those positives. They put him at the four. They let him take the ball up. He was facilitating a lot, two-way player. And I think that's what the Clippers have to do. They have to highlight his strengths. He's going to drive you crazy sometimes. He's going to take dumb shots. He's going to chuck at times. You know, there's going to be times when he does that. But I think if they play him the right way in the right situations and highlight his strengths, he can be very valuable. I actually think maybe playing him with Chris Paul could really help him out because, you know, I think he'll get more open shots, open looks, and that could really help him when if he's playing like maybe he can play the Matt Barnes role. You know, Josh Smith is great at cutting, and Matt Barnes was one of the probably the best cutter on the team. So that might be a role for him where he can really excel.
And not just the cutting. I mean, going back to the passing. I mean, we're talking about passing out of the high post and the things that he can do. We've seen CP and Blake lob to DeAndre so much. And when I look back at that Houston series, what I noticed a lot was seeing similar type of action where you would see Josh Smith throw lobs to Dwight.
Right.
And you just say, okay, well, you know, swap Dwight for DJ and you've got – yeah, that's perfect for Josh Smith. So, you know, just seeing those abilities, I mean, to think of him in the situation where he's the primary scorer, which he isn't going to be, or that he's going to take these bad shots and all of a sudden that his ability to make or miss a shot is somehow like it hinges on how good this bench is. I mean, I feel like that's a little ludicrous. And to get into these situations, because I feel like a lot of people have it built in their minds that they're going to see this play out in the season where you might have Blake wide open while, like, Josh Smith has got a contested shot like 22 feet away where like Blake's like, hey, I'm open, Josh. And Josh is like, nah, Blake, Smooth got to eat. And like he's going to like chuck the shot up. You know, like I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, my God. No. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what people are imagining or people are trying to, you know, poke fun at it. But, you know, both guys are great facilitators and they have their strengths and they're very good at an open court. So I think you'll see a lot more transition actually more than anything else.
Lance and Smooth and Austin Rivers will playoff Austin Rivers. I can't believe I'm saying playoff Austin Rivers. That, you know, like that you get guys like that into a transition game. And I feel like that's going to be really exciting.
That's what I'm looking forward to. The transition.
Yeah.
You can actually try to line up Blake, DJ, Lance, Josh, if you want to go really crazy with the transition game and all athletes, you could do that.
It'll definitely be the most athletic lineup on the floor at any given time against any opponent, I would say. Right. I don't know how well it would work out, but again, we'll see when the season comes around.
Right.
Yeah. But overall, this leaves the team with 13 players, and so they've still got a spot. You feel like it should be filled, like those two spots should be filled up with at least one 3-and-D guy. Some people have talked about the need for an additional point guard. Some would like to see an additional big. We haven't even got into the signing of Brandon Dawson and how exciting he's looked in Summer League. And I know at Summer League, so his high motor is being used against inferior talent in most cases, but I definitely feel like he can fit this role where he can be a good energy guy that fits that length and positionless basketball type thing, that, you know, type mentality that fits in with so much of the rest of the bench so far. Again, he's not the most rangy in terms of shot, but if you just need an energy guy like a Rhino. You know, a few seasons back. I mean, for him to be a high energy. To me, it's weird because I mean, I've heard some people want to talk about him in comparison to Draymond Green, which I don't think is the case because he definitely can't shoot like Draymond Green.
No.
And then you have some people that even compare him to Farid because of his high motor and
Right.
his athleticism. To me, he's somewhere in between. It's weird. Like the thing that comes up with me is like it's almost like a more athletic Chuck Hayes. But when you start getting down this line of things, it gets silly with how much we try to take players and place them into roles and ideas that we know already. Like, oh, this player has to be like this player, or this player has to be like this player. It makes me think back to this something I was reading out of Jackie Chan's autobiography, which was quite a few years back, where when he first came on the scene, people were really asking, "Hey, are you the next Bruce Lee? Are you going to be the next Bruce Lee?" And he's saying, "No, I'm going to be the first Jackie Chan." And it's completely the case here too. Like, let Brandon Dawson be Brandon Dawson because we haven't even seen him in an NBA game yet. Let's figure it out from there.
Right, yeah, of course. People are going to feel the need to compare them. Obviously, the Draymond thing is because they both went to Michigan State. They can do some similar things, but that's what people do. And we got to see how he plays first before we can truly compare him to anybody. But if there was anybody to compare him to, I'd say he's the next Jumpin' James Singleton.
Oh man, James Singleton. Oh, that's that brings me back. It's but man, but moving back, I mean, we kind of derailed from what we were talking about filling out these last two roster spots. And any names that come to mind? I know Darrell Arthur's been mentioned. Again, we were saying earlier before we got into the tangent of Brandon Dawson, whether you would pick a 3-and-D guy or if a backup point guard is more necessary. I mean, how would you look to really fill out those last two roles?
Well, last two, but there could be more. Right now you're saying there's 13, including Jamal, right? If Jamal leaves, then that's three open spots. So,
Yes.
we don't know how many spots are open. And are you including Jordan Hamilton? Because I'm assuming he won't be back either.
Well, if you're including Jordan Hamilton, then yeah, I feel like, yeah, he's only partially guaranteed, or yeah.
I have a feeling he won't be back either. So you never know. There could be two, three, maybe even four open spots. But I think I think the need for 3-and-D guys is there. Maybe another big. If the Clippers could somehow nab Darrell Arthur, I mean, talk about an upgrade on the front court in general from last year. Oh my God, Arthur Aldridge and Josh Smith, that would be awesome. Point guards. It's a very thin crop right now, free agent point guards. You're talking about guys like Luke Ridnour. I don't even know who's still available.
Yeah, just Luke Ridnour comes to mind because he's been on like 20 teams this offseason
Right.
already. So.
And it'll be great just to see him live tweeting him going to another team. But this time he won't be saying, God damn it. He'll actually volunteer to join the team.
I can't think of too many point guards that are available. I know when it comes to people making suggestions that they're usually tied to players that they've been fond of previously.
Right.
So I know Darren Collison comes up a lot. I don't know. I
We thought
mean,
about trade ship potential players that could be traded. As far as free
yeah.
agents, there's not many. I mean, I've heard Donald Sloan, Ish Smith, a couple of names there. I mean, you just need like a third guard, like a third string point guard who can, who has some skill. There's not much out there as far as point guard crop. I think 3-and-D guys, you got Darrell Wright. Not much else either. Most of the guys are gone. So I don't know, but they still they have. But the thing is, like, I was listening to the Doc interview today with on Colin Cowherd, and he stated that he's going to go on vacation in 4 days, and he intends to fill out the roster by then. So take that what you will. Obviously, they signed Josh today, so there may be a couple more moves they're doing in the next couple of days to fill out the roster.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at a list of free agents right now myself. The NBA TV notable unsigned free agents list, I mean, you look at this list all the way up and down, and when it comes to having a guard or a point guard, someone that could be a point guard, the top guy they have on this list is Jason Terry. So when it comes to point guards in general, it is very slim pickings right now. So maybe it's a situation where they look in other directions.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just have to see.
We'll have to see. Any players you're hoping for? I mean, for me, if they can get, like you said, like if they can get Terrell Arthur, I would be ecstatic. And that, again, because he could play multiple positions as well, I feel like it kind of continues to fit into this positionless basketball ideal that they've been following up with the bench and the offseason acquisitions so far.
Yeah, no, that he's on top of my list. Him and Darrell Wright, the two guys. I think if they can get those two guys, they're done for the summer. I'm perfectly satisfied. That's pretty much the perfect summer. Or as close to perfect as it can get for me in quite some time.
That's it. Just lock it up, pack it in. That's it.
Yeah. Shut it down. Let's go home.
All right then. Well, I think we'll see in the coming months. But for now, we are going to end this voyage on the Full Sail podcast. For the listeners that have stuck through this very long episode, we thank you so much. And for all the ones that asked us questions that hopefully we got to during the episode, we appreciate it. So for David Deep, for Brandon Tomoy, once again, this is the Full Sail Podcast. Thank you for cruising with us again.